We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey yo, welcome in to CHGO White Sox Post Game Show presented by PointsBet. Use promo code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. It is a White Sox loser. The White Sox lose this one 16-3 against the Boston Red Sox. The White Sox fall to 21-21 on the season. The Boston Red Sox improve to 20-22. I am Sean Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. Alongside me is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You could follow him on Twitter at EchnerWall23. You can follow the show on Twitter at CHGO_White Sox. Thank you everybody for, you know, who's already hanging out in the live chat. I see Nicholas Mariano of CHGO Bears hanging out. Our guy Fred, who called an Adam Engel home run that didn't happen in the CHGO pregame. Eric Fenton, who I know is a transplant. Thank you guys for hanging out. We appreciate it. And if you're a podcast listener, listening to us on your day, you know, into work, taking us here on this, what would be Wednesday, Herb, we appreciate you as well.
It was somebody in the pregame that predicted the score to be 11-8 White Sox. Now,
it was Brennan Frawley, I think.
Yeah, so Brennan got the number right. The number of runs going to be scored today, the 19, but the White Sox didn't participate in the scoring. But wow, damn, that was a tough one. After like the third inning, I was like, damn, we got to watch the rest of this sumbitch. That's part of our job.
Yeah, Alex said he picked the right night to skip this game and go to trivia. Sam Davis Jr. is asking, he had a colonoscopy tonight. What did I miss? Really after the first pitch, you could have turned this game off. First pitch, Dylan Cease throws to Kike Hernandez, and he takes it yard. So the White Sox started off on a deficit 1-0 after the first pitch, and it did not get better at any point in this game, Herb. And it led me to a little project here, and let's just jump right into it. We usually start with the starting pitchers. We usually start with Dylan Cease. But there's the old Tommy Lasorda saying, you win 60, you lose 60, Evan, there's the other 42. And we're going to try to start figuring this out. You know, which ones are actually the 60 wins that you just expect in a year? Which ones are the 60 losses you just expect in the year? And then which ones are the other 42? You can look right now. Absolutely, you could file this as the Sox 14th loss this year. They got their ass kicked from the first pitch, and I don't even need to think about it. Fred said it's another flush game. I don't think good teams have as many as the Sox had in the first quarter of the season. That's kind of what I want to talk to you about right now, Herb. You know, this is another flush game. This is a point of the Sox season where we thought, hey, maybe everything's going to turn around for this team right now after taking two from the Yankees. But this was just a bad night to be a White Sox fan, player, front office, you know, beer tender, anything.
Yeah, they keep on using up the loss column on those on that chart you just had. And the 42 are going the opposite way of where we need them to be. So, yeah, we've had way too many of these. Oh, man, that was a stinker. Flush that away and let's see them tomorrow. And, yes, the optimist in everybody would be like, enjoy yourself with those 16 runs. It only counts as one loss for the White Sox, one win for the Red Sox. But it's just demoralizing. Teams like this don't get beat. Like, championship caliber teams don't get beat this often, this many times. It's the middle of May. We've seen them getting beat like this a lot. And it's not necessarily usually the starting pitchers who have been sparkling this year. But Dylan Cease, whoo, friends, it was a tough night. His velocity looked good to me. His miles per hour looked good to me. His location was all right, but those people were seeing and being it. I was shocked how badly he pitched tonight and how great the Boston Red Sox were seeing him tonight. I mean, started off, you said, I like to call him, I like to call Enrique Hernandez. Good job with that hit. And then Trevor Story later on with the three-run home run in the first inning. I was driving back home from the studio, and I was like, man, that's a tough one. I'm glad Steven told me to go home to watch this game at home instead of watching at the studios, because, man, I would have been throwing stuff. I would have ate all the Starburst. Like, I usually eat like five or six, but just that bingy. Whole candy jar would have been empty because I would have been like nervously eating, finding something else to do. But I'm just so, exhausted, tired.
I ended up stress eating Luke Stuckmeyer brought in donuts. I stress ate some of those.
Awesome. Do right donuts. Yes, all of those. I would have ate some of those too if I was stuck around. But yes, this is another flush it game. And I don't know what that means. But if you do look at a team that is trying to compete for a championship, they don't have many of these, and the White Sox had already their season full of these games.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, let's just go into this, the other 42, and kind of have this discussion. Marion Jeremic says, Red Sox have three guys in their lineup with an OPS over 800, and Story is reigning AL Player of the Week. Meanwhile, the Sox lineup had TA batting 360 and only one other guy batting above 240. I mean, yeah, that's a part of it. This Red Sox team is red hot, so I don't really think of it as the worst thing ever that you got beat up by this team. But right now, this is the other 42 that we're talking about. They're 8-7 in these 15 games. So they do have a winning record. But let's look at the other important, 42 games. Let's look at a World Series caliber team, because I see Tom Jankowski saying, but we have a World Series club. I mean, I think that they do. I mean, it's May. they play the World Series in October. We have no idea what this team is going to be performing like in October. And you could see, last year's World Series champion, the Atlanta Braves, 28-13 in those other 42 games. The Washington Nationals in 2019, 33-9. The 2017 Astros, who literally were cheating, were 41-1 in those other 42. The Chicago Cubs had 103 wins. So right there, they had 59 wins. The other 60 really didn't exist. They went 42-0 in their other 42. But the St. Louis Cardinals, Tony La Russa's last World Series champion team, 30-12, and the 2005 White Sox, 39-3. So right now the Sox, if they only lose two more of the other 42, they could still be where the Nationals were. The Braves were, again, 28-13. The Sox, it's not as dire as we can make it out to be. This is a really tough opening schedule, and the Sox are going to have to make sure that they really take advantage of the weak second half that the White Sox schedule is. But I'm not looking at this as the end all of the White Sox season, Herb. I don't think it's that dire. I think they just had a really bad night against a really hot team.
Yeah, they're hot, but they had to get this hot six games in a row to only get to two games under 500. So yes, they're hot right now, but overall they've had a poor season. They've had an underwhelming season as the White Sox have now back at 500. So you shouldn't be getting beat like this to a team that is on your level. This is pretty much the same team that is on your level. Yes, they have a bunch of hitters who hit over 800 OPS, and JD Martinez, Kike Hernandez, the Devers, and the Bogarts guys, and Trevor Story having a great week of himself and had a golden sombrero for himself today too. But before that, he hit that three-run home run. Yes, it's a good hitting team, but we have a pitcher that we think is a Cy Young candidate going now into the future, and he had a horrible day. And I don't think that set the tone for the rest of the team. Now, offense sometimes needs to pick up the pitchers because the pitchers have done that so many times this year for the offense. I need one of those games or a couple of those games where the offense says, okay, you gave up four in the first. We got your back, brother. Just came out lifeless. And yes, Pavetta was pretty good. That hook was filthy. The people were getting frozen on him. But you have to have better at bats. He went nine up, nine down pretty easily.
Yeah, he did. I mean, the White Sox didn't have a hit until the fourth inning when my click to pick came through and Tim Anderson. So just nice wanna, you know, always bragging, always giving myself a pat on the back when I can. But Sam Davis asking, any thoughts on Dylan tipping? Let's go into the pitching lines for today and talk a little bit about Dylan, because I don't think it was, you know, it's bad. It's ugly, right? Three innings pitch, seven earned runs. Eight hits allowed, two walks, four Ks. Pavetta, six innings, three earned runs, five hits, two walks, five Ks. And let's go to Cease's pitch mix here, because it was bad, but his mistakes were just absolutely tattooed. And one thing, too, is, you know, after watching this with the Yankees and after watching this with the Red Sox, I do wonder what Dylan Cease's first pitch needs to be. I think that's a big discussion or a big strategy that he needs to start looking at when he's facing these better teams, because it really does feel like they're sitting first pitch fastball. And whenever he throws first pitch fastball, a lot of bad things happen. But we'll look at the typical numbers here and, you know, not good, Bob, for Dylan Cease. Called strikes plus whiff percentage, 23. Major league average is 27. So a below average night. Dylan was just not loading up the zones, not really, you know, fooling anybody. He did get a decent amount of whiffs on his slider and four-seam fastballs. He got five on both of those, a 26% whiff rate, which is pretty decent, but just nothing really working. They were seeing a lot of things tonight. His knuckle curve got hit hard and got hung up a couple times. His slider didn't break a couple times and got hit hard. And again, his four-seam fastball, first pitch, they were hunting it, Herb. And I think that's the thing that is really what we've seen in a bad Dylan Cease start this year, is guys waiting and hitting that first pitch fastball. So I do wonder if that's something that he needs to start changing up a little bit, because he started doing that later on in the game and he started getting more outs, you know, efficiently. So I do wonder if he starts starting off, you know, hitters with a hook, starting them off with a slider, maybe he then can work the fastball in. That's the only thing that I can think of, because the stuff looks, you know, fairly all right. I mean, it wasn't breaking great today. The spin was a little bit off. His movement wasn't as sharp as it usually is. But I feel like if he had this stuff up against the Royals, it wouldn't be as ugly as it is, you know, going up against a red hot Red Sox team. So I think they just had a really good strategy tonight. And I just think Dylan probably had, you know, C plus stuff, and it got hit like F stuff.
Yeah, and most would point to the leadoff hitter, Enrique Hernandez, hitting that home run off the first pitch as the turning point of the game, or the point where you're like, okay, Cease doesn't have it. No, I think he recovered himself. I know he gave up a hit, but I think it was a JD Martinez at bat where it's 10 pitches, and JD Martinez is just falling off all the stuff he's throwing at him, all of it, and then he eventually walks him. That's where I think I knew, okay, this is going to be a tough game. He's not going to get through, because that man just battled him, and then he pretty much not gave up, but he resigned to the fact that he can't get a fastball past JD Martinez. JD Martinez is a professional hitter. It's no, you know, slight to him that JD Martinez went to a 10-pitch at bat. But there I was like, okay, he's in trouble. And I didn't see him getting over his slider, his curveball consistently. So maybe he thought in his bullpen, like, okay, what I have now is my fastball. And yes, teams like the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees do scouting reports and have game plans against these pitchers. And it looked like their game plan was to attack his fastball early in the count, and they jumped all over it. They did not miss it. He had nine hard hit balls against him this start. That's just very uncharacteristic, very uncanny. You know, guys usually striking people out. The Yankees did catch him, but I don't think that was a game like this one. You said that game, actually, you were impressed because they struck out 11 Yankees. Mm-hmm. This game, he was lost. It was not even close to even C-plus stuff. I think it was like D stuff, and they were crushing it.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, again, it was below average. So, I mean, if you do want to say it's D stuff, I really can't argue it because it's ugly on the stat line. Either way, it got hit around no matter which way we cut it up. Let's go and talk to Vinny Duber and see what Dylan Cease had to say for his start. But before we do that, the best way to support CHGO is to download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. If you do that right now, you get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. But that's not it. Make a $50 or more first-time deposit. You'll receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker. That's $2,000 in free bets, a free CHGO membership, and a free t-shirt from the CHGO locker, all for making more than a $50 first-time deposit at PointsBet. If you have questions, you can email pointsbet@allchgo.com, and we will help you out. PointsBet is your home for live in-play betting, and it just got even better introducing PointsBet's newest feature, the live NBA same-game parlay. For the first time ever, you can build the perfect live NBA same-game parlay only with PointsBet. You can combine your favorite bets anytime during the game. And if you want more, you can also boost your live same game parlays. You can watch live, parlay live, and boost live with PointsBet. Online signup is available in Illinois. You can download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. And our next partner has a product I use literally every day. I started taking AG1s because I started my first full-time job when I started this job back in March, early March, and I needed to start my day off with a better routine, and AG1s has seamlessly fit into that routine. It doesn't taste super healthy. It kind of has a mild tropical taste that I look forward to each and every morning. And with one delicious scoop of AG1s, I absorb 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole foods or superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help me start my day right. This special blend of ingredients helps support my gut health, my nervous system, my immune system, my energy, my ability to recover, my ability to focus, and my, you know, ability to stay looking beautiful and 24 years young. I look forward to starting my day off right with AG1 because it's lifestyle friendly, whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free. And Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day, one scoop in about 8 to 12 ounces of water. That's it. No need for millions of different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you 1 year of a free supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your free purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CHGOSOX. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CHGOSOX to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Hi, Vinny.
Hi, guys. Herb, can I get a ruling on this? Is Sean allowed to say 24 years young if he's actually young? Like, isn't that joke reserved for when, you know, you're not young?
Yeah, when you're 43.
Right.
You say you're 43 years young?
Yeah. Yeah, Sean, I don't know about that. I might be calling a foul on that one.
It's tough to sell aging, guys, when you're not old. I'm sorry. Here's the best way to show that I don't age is that I was born in 1997. It's just I was born at the fountain of youth. You know, I get your point, but too bad. I'm young. Vinny, I'm guessing you talked to Dylan Cease. A rough outing for Dylan Cease. What did Dylan have to say about his outing tonight?
Obviously, he wasn't happy. I think a lot of people were maybe suspicious that he might have been tipping some pitches because of the way the Red Sox jumped all over him tonight. And he said it was a possibility. I think Tony said, you know, that thought comes to mind as well when you're watching what you're watching. But Dylan basically stuck to the idea of he's not going to draw any conclusions from tonight until he goes back and kind of dissects it a little bit. So he didn't really have an explanation for why, because they're going to get into that in the coming days. But obviously the results were very bad.
And I was just wondering how a clubhouse looks after another one of these. I know we've talked about it, but do they just like, okay, let's just flush that. It's just one loss. We don't care. We don't care, but you're not going to sulk on this. Or they're like, you know what? This is tough. And we're just very sullen in that clubhouse.
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit of both, right? I mean, and I think it has to do with the time. So, I mean, you know, immediately after a game like this, everybody's going to be quiet. You know, it's a drastically different environment post-game in a clubhouse when it's a win versus a loss. When it's a win, it's a party with all the music going. When it's a loss, no matter if it, you know, it was a one-run loss or a 13-run loss, it's, you know, very quiet in there. So, but at the same time, I think everybody's kind of confident that they can flush this, get rid of it right away, move on. The maximum baseball is, you know, we'll take the rest of the day and until you come to the park tomorrow to react to this, whether it's a good emotion or a bad emotion, depending on the outcome. But when you show up tomorrow, you know, doesn't matter what happened yesterday.
Yeah, well, one thing that matters today and will affect the team coming up in the upcoming games, Luis Robert placed on the IL in the, is it the COVID list? How are we supposed to refer to it? Is it the IL or is it the COVID list?
It is the COVID-related IL.
Oh, okay. So the COVID-related IL for Luis Robert. What do we know about Luis Robert's absence and how long it may be?
Yeah, it seemed just because of the symptoms that he was experiencing or is experiencing, according to Rick Hahn, they expect to be without him for a week. I think the earliest that you would see him is the Toronto series, which starts next Tuesday in Toronto. So he is definitely out for the Red Sox series and likely to miss the Cubs series over the weekend as well.
But the news I heard with Robert is that he is vaccinated. So if he is correct over those responses, he can play in Toronto, right?
Correct. Yes.
So, I mean, we had some good news today. Vince Velasquez out of the bullpen in his new role looked pretty sparkling. What did Tony have to say about his performance?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he was great. You know, I don't think you know, you need to be Tony or me or some guy watching at home to know that he was great. The question is that the role? Is that the way they're going to use him moving forward? And certainly it looks that way. You know, you saw the probable pitching for the next week here. You had Cease tonight. You know, you'll have Giolito tomorrow, Dallas on Thursday. And then that Cubs series is going to be Cueto and Cease again Saturday and Sunday. So it is interesting to see how they're going to handle this sudden wealth of pitching. Lance Lynn is expected to make a rehab start, his first one, by the end of the weekend, you know, so starting next week, we should have Lance Lynn pitching in a pro game, you know, to think about and what that would mean for this rotation. So a lot of arms right now, and that's a good thing, obviously, for the White Sox, but it means that some guys are going to have to be moved around at the very least. And Velasquez seems to be the first person who that happened to. He pitched out of the bullpen on what I guess you would assume is his first day, quote unquote, out of the rotation. Now, does that mean you're never going to see him start again the rest of the year? No, probably not. There are spot starts that need to happen, doubleheaders on the calendar. It could very well be that Vince Velasquez has to come back in the event of an injury. Who knows? But to see that he is handling a bullpen assignment well is a big positive for the White Sox, because he's pitched pretty well in general for them. Certainly better, I think, than a lot of people thought he was going to be when they first signed him, based on the results throughout his career. So it's a good thing to add another bullpen arm that you can turn to, and it's a good thing that you don't have to completely jettison you know, somebody who has turned in some quality innings for you.
So I have two things to follow up on. One, Michael Kopech, you know, they're going to be skipping him this go around in the next five games. And then also Lance Lynn, you talked about his return. So what do we know about Kopech? Are they looking to get him as much rest as possible? And then Lance Lynn, is there a date, maybe a series we can look out for?
I believe Lance Lynn is scheduled, or is the earliest he could come off the injured list, is June 6th, because you remember they transferred him to the 60-day IL, and so that is going to be the first day that he is able to come back. But again, everything's running smoothly for him. They said live BP went really well today, and that the plan is to have him start a rehab assignment before this weekend is over. So that's very positive, I think, considering, you know, everything that Lance Lynn has been recovering from since that preseason knee surgery. In terms of Kopech, yeah, you saw Sunday night how good he looked with a little extra rest. Now, obviously, that was, you know, the cause or the result perhaps of that paternity leave that he was on, and kind of them not necessarily knowing where he was going to be. But you saw Michael Kopech have his best game in his career as a major leaguer with a little extra rest. You saw last year how much Carlos Rodon benefited from a little extra rest between starts. And on top of that, there's this whole innings or pitches idea with Michael Kopech and how they're going to manage that workload over the course of the season, this is a good way to manage it. And you know, Rick Hahn was asked about it today. Are you, you know, can he pitch so well that he's going to, you know, change your plans in terms of that innings limit? And Rick said what I think has really been the case, which is maybe there's no specific number that is that innings limit. Maybe it's more of a general area, but it can change based on how he looks, and it can be more based on he looks really great right now, keep him going, or, you know, maybe take, you know, take your foot off the gas pedal a little bit. I think this is kind of a way to get in between that those two areas, which is give him a couple days. He's not throwing literally every fifth day and racking up the pitches and racking up the innings because they want him as strong as possible so he can make starts like he did on Sunday night in September and they hope October.
And speaking of Rick Hahn, what did he have to say about Eloy Jimenez rehab and where his progress is?
Yeah, also by the end of the week, which is that's the expectation there that him and Lance, Eloy and Lance will kind of be on rehab assignments at the same time or starting them at the same time. So by the end of the week, you know, you'll probably see Eloy in some minor league games.
We did see the return of an injured White Sox. Aaron Bummer came out and pitched the ninth inning, looked pretty decent. What is the report on Bummer? Any thoughts on how they might work him in? Obviously, blowout tonight, so easy to just get him some rest or some reps late in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think until further notice, Aaron Bummer is going to be, you know, revered as his track record says he should be kind of thing. And, you know, obviously the results have not been great, as we've seen. And the White Sox have been fortunate enough to have someone step up, right? Matt Foster, who has kind of become a part of that late inning mix. I don't think Aaron Bummer is out of that late inning mix. And we have seen how kind of judiciously Tony La Russa and the White Sox have used those late inning relievers. You know, guys like Kendall Graveman and Joe Kelly are not being worked, you know, 2-3 days in a row at the moment. And again, that's an effort to keep them as fresh as possible for late in the year. And so Aaron Bummer being available to pitch those innings or, you know, to try and have success, to try and move past those early season struggles would make a lot of sense. And I think that's probably what you're going to see is, you know, you'll see Aaron Bummer in a seventh inning on a day when Joe Kelly can't pitch, or you'll see Aaron Bummer in an eighth inning on a day when maybe Foster and Graveman pitched the day before. I think it's just going to be kind of mix and match and see who's kind of available as they kind of slow play using their bullpen so they can prepare them for the end of the year.
And what Rick had to say about the whole Josh Donaldson, Tim Anderson kerfuffle?
Not much. I mean, I think that, you know, he very much kind of said, listen, I've told the team, I've told the league what I thought in private, and he wanted it to kind of stay that way, and that's perfectly reasonable. He did have a lot of good things to say about Tim, and that's kind of what I wrote about today because I was kind of struck in a similar fashion, which is, you know, Tim didn't ask to be a part of this, right? Tim was minding his own business, basically, and got swept into this thing because of Josh Donaldson being Josh Donaldson. And we got to see Tim Anderson be Tim Anderson. And that was, you know, incredibly impressive, I think. Not only do you handle this well, but you come to play at the same time. And you let the stick talk, as he's said. But every time Tim talks, he kind of, you know, he reveals what kind of person he is, just like Donaldson revealed what kind of person he is. And you can't help but be impressed with the way Tim has handled this situation and carries himself basically the same on a completely daily basis.
Yes, yeah, salute to General Area. He was mentioned a little bit earlier. Also, shout out to Herb's dropping of kerfuffle. Really appreciated that as well. But you got to talk to TA before this game as well, and I kind of had the same takeaway as you. We listened to about a minute and 40 seconds of TA talking, and the one thing that it felt like TA took away from this is, how do I be a good teammate from this, and how do I help, you know, how does this help my game? Right. And it really felt like Tim Anderson took away just the ability to grow and use it as motivation. And that was really great to see from Tim Anderson. I thought that he handled this whole situation with a lot of maturity, but you were able to talk to him today. It felt very mature from Tim Anderson today.
Yeah. And I think the idea is that there wasn't a need for Tim to grow. There wasn't a need for Tim to be a better teammate. Tim is the ultimate in those things already. The thing that you saw was him not him not change who he is because of this, or not question who he is because of this, not for him to say, you know, I need to react to this, but I need to be myself through this. And certainly since he's made that life decision, you know, he went through the death of his best friend, you know, since he made the decision to be this fun loving guy and to really kind of see the positive in everything, he has been an example for not just, you know, not just kids or fans or anything like that, but every single one of his teammates. And that's what you saw over the weekend, was his teammates, you know, rise to the occasion too and support him, which again, they've done all the time. This was Tim and the White Sox being what Tim and the White Sox always are. And I think that, you know, they always say, right, that you find out what you're made of when times get tough, or when, you know, when challenges arise. You know, you saw them be themselves. And I think that is the most admirable thing about this, not only for his teammates, but obviously for him.
Having the homestand now, Rick Hahn making himself available to the media. Any other notes that we should know about Rick Hahn talking to the media a little bit earlier, before the game today?
Yeah, not really, to be honest with you. I mean, I think we've covered them mostly here. You know, obviously you have the way that pitching staff is going to be structured. And he said, you know, if the day comes where we've got too many arms that we've got to choose from, that'll be a good problem to have. That'll be interesting to watch as time goes on, because, you know, as you know, it's a very what have you done for me lately kind of thing. And one bad start from some of those candidates who might be on the fringe, right, could really, you know, kind of change everybody's opinion in a hurry. So we've seen already Vince Velasquez get moved to the bullpen. What happens if Dallas Keuchel turns things around, and Dallas Keuchel is excellent for a few starts? What happens if Johnny Cueto's fast start hits some road bumps, right? I mean, what are the White Sox going to view when the time comes that they actually need to make a roster decision? So, you know, every game here is kind of important for some of those guys who aren't that top three right now, soon to be top four when Lance Lynn comes back.
Evan, the final question I have for you, final baseball question we have, is Andrew Vaughn. He had a nice day today at the plate, but we keep seeing him 8-9. Any talk about the, you know, for those lineup Eastas out there, any talks about Andrew Vaughn possibly getting moved up in this lineup?
Not today, but I mean, listen, I think there's something to be said about lineup versatility. I don't think it necessarily means that you should, you know, again, if I was the manager, I wouldn't bury him down there, but I'm not the manager for a very good reason. So I think that you've got to kind of look at the versatility. There are guys who are, you know, for better or worse, meant to go in certain spots in the lineup. We've talked about it before. And there are guys who have the ability to hit all over the place. You know what I mean? And I think when you have that versatility, it can maybe give the manager more options, not put so much pressure on, oh, this guy needs to bat here, this guy needs to bat here. At least I got a guy that I can move all over the place. You know, I'm not going to say that it's, like I said, that it's what I would do. If you think it's not what you would do, then you're, you know, perfectly within your opinion to have that. But until it starts, you know, until it starts costing them games or something like that, I don't see it as some sort of gigantic problem at the moment, because you hit where you hit, and if you get hits, then you're doing your job right.
Saw Jake Berger taking second base after the game was pretty much in out of hand. Was that something that Tony wanted to see anyways, Jake play in second base, and something we might see in the future?
No, actually, he was asked that post game, and it sounded like something he's not really interested in doing moving forward. It was just kind of he wanted to take Tim Anderson out of the game so Tim didn't hurt himself in a 13 run game, and Jake Berger playing second base was a way to do that.
Could have been Andrew Vaughn, you know.
Every time he is asked about Jake Berger playing second base, he brings up that he would play Andrew Vaughn at second base if he had to. And obviously, we saw last summer that he did play Andrew Vaughn at second base in Kansas City. That is a kind of running joke between him and Rick Hahn, because every time Rick Hahn's asked about it, he's like, I don't know about Andrew Vaughn at second base. But Tony is, you know, adamant that if the opportunity presented itself, if the need arise, we should say, he would have no problem playing Vaughn at second base.
We haven't seen it yet, but who's the White Sox position player to pitch Can you figure that out?
I mean, it has to be Larry Garcia, right? I mean, I think okay. He's got the most innings under his belt, at least on this roster right now. You're right, though. I was actually kind of surprised we didn't see it tonight. But like you mentioned, there were some guys who needed to get work. In fact, when I asked about Vince Velasquez going in as a reliever and kind of is that going to be his new role, Tony said, you know, he didn't really say like, yes, he's going to be a reliever. But the idea being that if he was still a starter, he'd be sitting around for an awful long time, and you don't want him to kind of rust, or to use Tony words, to get a sore butt. So there you go. That's the situation there. But yeah, I would have to imagine it'd be Larry Garcia, but who knows?
Yeah, and that's something fun, hopefully, that we never have to think about again. Hopefully the White Sox aren't losing games 16-3. Maybe we can flip the roles here. And maybe
he can come in a blowout win.
Right.
He can come in at 16-3 win.
I think what would be kind of fun, you see, you're seeing what the St. Louis Cardinals are doing, trotting their longtime heroes out, Pujols and Molina to pitch. Why not get an inning under Jose's belt before he rides off into the sunset?
I agree 100%. I would love to see TA pitch. That would be fantastic to see. I feel like Moncada would have an arm. Andrew Vaughn, I'd love to see him do anything. So those are just some names that come to my mind. But I don't know about you guys.
No, I don't want to see TA pitch because I don't want him to get hurt. But otherwise, the other guys, I mean, it's not like I want to see Jose Abreu get hurt, but he's older. So I don't, you know, if he gets hurt, he gets hurt.
Yeah, TA and Moncada is probably not going to happen. I gotta be honest with you there, Sean.
Darn. Well, hopefully we just don't have to see any games like this anymore. Hopefully they're just normal baseball games that aren't, you know, separated by how many 13 runs today. We can avoid all that unless the White Sox are blowing teams out, which they haven't yet. But Vinny, that's not your problem. Go right to your heart's content. Follow Vinny Duber on Twitter, at Vinny Duber. He is the CHGO White Sox beat writer. Thank you for your time, Vinny.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you later.
You can find Vinny's work at allchgo.com. If you want to become a member, go to allchgo.com. We have premium written content over there by our great beat writers like Vinny Duber, like Ryan Herrera, like Adam Hogue,
Nicholas Moriano.
Boyson, Nicholas Moriano. Everyone is fantastic at allchgo.com. And that's how you become a premium member over there to get the premium written content, allchgo.com. And when you sign up to become a member, you get a free t-shirt and access into our CHGO Discord. It's the CHGO Lounge where you get to talk to us, the CHGO personalities. It is a good time. So you want to make sure that you head over to allchgo.com. And another way too, to get a CHGO membership, if you enjoy CHGO, one way to help us continue to grow is to download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. Not only are you going to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000, but if you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you'll receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, like that was Vinny Duber articles, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker. If you have any questions, you can email pointsbet@allchgo.com, and we will help you out. And in case you missed it, online sign-up is available in Illinois. You can download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. You'll be signing up with the fastest sportsbook easier than ever, so you can start living your bet life in seconds. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. And Herb, I did see somebody in the chat here, Paul Smith, very real name, very That's not him. Made up. He was saying, we were dodging his questions here. We already got to the Lance Lynn stuff. Lance Lynn will be returning early June. All right. That's when Lynn is coming. Thursday probably won't be Dallas Keuchel's last start. If I had to make a call here, I think Dallas Keuchel might get at least two more starts here in the White Sox pinstripes.
Yeah, I agree. And Southside Bears trying to kill Aloy. He's just coming back from an injury. He's like, I want to see Aloy pitch. Come on, Southside It'd be fun. Bear. Yeah, until he has a Tommy John surgery right after that game. No, I don't want to see anybody of any value. Exactly, Fred. No Aloy. He's going to have Tommy John after of any value pitching.
Well, that's good. That's good, though. If Aloy gets Tommy John, they don't have to play him in the outfield. We could stop this charade that he's an outfielder.
I mean, look at you, Sean. Always looking for the silver linings.
Yeah, put him on the DH. Put him at DH.
Yeah, you're talking to the right guy there. I love for him to be the all-time DH so he can stop being hurt. Well, this time he got hurt running. I'm excited, but I think even though this loss is, bad, I'm excited about the team coming back. You know, Lance Lynn and Aloy Jimenez starting rehabs this week. I can't help to wonder if this team is snake bit, though. Right when you're about to get everybody back, you're about to lose. You lose Luis Robert for extended periods of time. He can come back for the Toronto series. I don't know, he's vaccinated, so if he passes with a couple negative tests and a doctor allows him to, he'll be eligible to go. But I don't know if he can enter Canada with so much of a, you know, a COVID scare within 10 days of his arrival in Canada. So
yeah, hopefully. Well, can you imagine if Luis Robert got stuck in Canada?
I don't want that. Yeah, he's got to have 14 days in Canada. I mean, good times, man. But also we're playing Tampa Bay, and then we're back here in Chicago, so we kind of need him. So if that's the case where Canada's like, hey, you got to quarantine for 14 days, I'm like, nope, sir. We'll just see you in Tampa Bay, brother.
Yeah, but hopefully, since a ball player, he gets some special exceptions here. But yeah,
do you think their team is snake bitten, though? Like, I feel they're snake bitten.
I don't think they're snake bitten. I think it's too early to call them snake bitten. Again, we're only, 42 games into the season. So it's pretty tough to call them snake bitten. Dylan Cease had a bad start, but for the most part of this season so far, the pitching's been phenomenal. Great. So I'm not too worried about the pitching, and the hitting will get better. I think that we see signs for it right now. And the fact that Jose Abreu hit that home run today, and then he ripped up a home run off a 94-mile-per-hour fastball, like, it feels like Jose's coming back. So it really feels like the only guys dragging their feet right now are Moncada and Grandal. And once those guys start going, I really do feel like, that's going to be something that starts clicking. And Alex is saying, Cease was tipping pitches. I'm interested to see what's going on, if that was true or not. We did see some stuff from Janice Curio of the CHGO Sky Show, but she's a fantastic White Sox writer in her own right. And she was at the game today, and she said a friend of hers noticed something with Dylan Cease's back leg, and that it might have been tipping pitches. And Vinny mentioned that Dylan needs to go and look back at the tape and see if that happens. I don't know if he was tipping pitches. I'm not really sure. I don't have the eye for that, Herb. But it just does feel that, you know, he has a pretty straight fastball, and I feel like guys are mostly just sitting fastballs. It looked different when he was throwing first pitch breaking balls, and I think it might have been a different story tonight if he started off that game a little bit differently.
I'm not ruling out that he tipped pitches, but was Jose Ruiz tipping pitches too? He got hit really hard. Same thing with Bennett Souza. They came in and lit the fire a little bit more. So yes, he might have been, but those other two guys probably were. I just think that was a hot hitting Red Sox team that just caught Dylan Cease on the wrong night. He didn't have his premium stuff, and they made him pay for it. And I hope we find something like tipping pitches so this can be okay. He was just tipping pitches. He's got stuff, and he can get major league batters out, because his last two out of his last three starts have not been great. The raises ERA to over 4 right now, and he got hit really hard. 9 hard hits on the day, 95 miles per hour or greater. They were seeing him being, it doesn't matter what he was throwing, they were getting into his kitchen.
Yeah, and like Josh says here, Joesh, Cease did have a bad start, but the Red Sox were insane in those first 5 innings. They weren't missing anything and haven't seen anything like it all season. I mean, they were just absolutely locked in. And Alex also saying Cease said he thought he was in the presser. Vinny said, Dylan Cease said it's possible he might have been tipping pitches. So,
but he didn't know. He's got to watch the tape. Yeah.
So yeah, we don't know if he was or not. But what Janice said is that her friend noticed a slower drop in his back leg when he was throwing breaking ball pitches. So I don't know if that was true. I can go back and see if that was the case or not. And hey, we know that Boston has a history of knowing pitches here, Herb.
Do you know that?
Yeah, Alex Cora got fired. I don't know if you guys remember for knowing pitches. So hey, if any team is outside of the Astros is going to know what pitch is coming next, it's Boston.
And speaking of Alex Rude was out at that game the whole damn day. The whole day. Come on, yeah, Alex.
I mean,
that's dedication. That's a White Sox fan, Alex Rude.
That's boredom.
Sitting in the 108. I don't know if you've seen his pitcher. You know, usually you get a
class pick.
Pick from Beef Loaf or Chirizi. And it was Alex and one other guy. And then Alexis, I guess, was at there. Alexis Atwater. And Alex waited conveniently until Alexis went to the bathroom to take that picture.
It was a good picture though. But yeah, let's go real quick to Dylan Cease, just because we're talking about the tipping pitches here. Let's go to his first pitch mix, just because it wasn't pretty also. I mean, this is, you could see right here, the four seam fastballs that he was throwing on elevated. First pitch. Yeah, you could see the sinkers that he was using here. He went to a two-seam fastball. He threw some changeups in there. But the big thing is, elevated and over the plate. He was just missing a lot, and it just wasn't the best mix. But even when he was throwing breaking balls, even with those bad locations, he was still getting some called strikes. He was still getting some swinging strikes. He was getting some fouls back. So I do think that maybe if Dylan was going breaking ball heavy, he might have had some different results here. He ended up using a slider and four-seam fastball the same. But, I think it's just one of the 60, Herb. We talked about this a little bit. It's just It just feels that, this was just the bad time to run into Boston. And I told this to Steven before you jumped on. If the White Sox, end up going 3-1, or you told me, after the first four games against Boston, you're 3-1 against Boston, I'm not too upset about that. In the moment right now, today, it feels bad, but in the grand scheme, I'm not too upset about this one.
Yeah. It's just one loss, and in the grand scheme, it'll count as such, but just going through this, I don't know if you think about this, but I think about this team should be competing for AL Central and the AL crown. So Have I seen a team do this many times of a blowout during a season? And, I have a short memory of that, but I cannot remember a team feeling this way as I feel about the White Sox, who are 21-21 in the season, where they've gotten blown out a couple times and it's been non-competitive. And you saw on the pitch mix right there with Dylan Cease, all those balls were elevated. All of them were middle to up in the strike zone. That's not going to work versus any team, much less a hot hitting great offensive squad like Boston. So I don't know if you need to be tipping pitches for the pitches are that high and that juicy. A slider middle didn't even break. I saw three of the sliders off the plate. That's where he probably needs to live with that. There was very few, there was none in the zone and low in the strike zone. I can't believe that was Dylan's game plan to keep the ball elevated versus Boston. I'm sure he was just missing spots.
Yeah, it just felt like the breaking balls weren't as snappy as they could have been. One of the ones that he threw to Enrique Hernandez got just absolutely smoked for a double. It just really felt that, it wasn't 100% Dylan Cease there.
A strikeout. I think one of those strikeouts, sorry about that, Sean, on a slider that was a cement mixer. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like the batter was like, oh my God, this is so delicious. And he swung right through it. It didn't do anything. It just hung there. And I can't believe the Boston guy did not murder it. It might've been Trevor Story who had the golden sombrero today, but it was just not good. Not Dylan Cease
Yeah, and I'm surprised he didn't use the changeup more. He only threw the changeup six times. He got three swings on it, one whiff, so he got a decent amount of swing and miss on it. But it just felt like they were all over the four seam, and maybe that changes next time. But with this whole, you win 60, you lose 60, then there's the other 42. Right now, the Sox are 8-7. We can go through a little bit of this list here, and I could kind of talk this out with you, We could. Look if if I misplaced any of these, but by my count of it, the White Sox have 13 of their 60 wins right now. They have 14 of their 60 losses, and then we have 15 games that fit in those 42 others. They're 8-7 in those 15 games.
And that is just the games that were hanging in the balance, and it could have gone to a win or it could have gone to a loss. Well,
yeah, let's run through them. So opening day was one of them. Hendricks came in with a lead, blew the save. The Seattle game that they won 3-2, that was the first game of the series. It was really close. They didn't pull away. They needed a good bullpen day. They got it. Same thing with the opening day against Tampa. That was another day. I think that was Liam Hendricks' bobblehead day, and he ended up coming in and getting the save. The day after that was either the actual Hendricks bobblehead day, but they had 2-3-2 wins against Tampa Bay. And then the 2-1 loss against Cleveland, they should have hit Zach Plesac better, but they didn't. 2-1 loss against Minnesota. That was the Saturday game before they blew it to Byron Buxton. Most of the games that they went to extra innings got filed into the 42 other ones. So the seventh game would be that Byron Buxton walk-off. You also have the Kansas City walk-off on the 28th. I didn't put Josh Naylor's in here, though, because the White Sox just absolutely lost that game. That was a flush game, as they called it. So that's the only non-extra inning game that you're not going to see in the other 42.
I would argue that belongs here.
You think so?
Yes. That's the game they literally had a six-run lead in. yeah, literally in the what, ninth inning, mm-hmm, and they lost that game. So I would put that in the 42 other. That wasn't a loss all the way. That was a, hey, it was hanging in. That was actually should have been a win. So that goes into the 42, I believe.
I hear your point. I mean, it's tough to argue again. Even when you're finishing, you know, in extra innings, they had a chance to win it at some point, mm-hmm, and that went to 11. So it wasn't like it went to just 10. So the White Sox had a couple chances to win that one. I hear your point, but the fact that it just ended the way it did, they call it a flush game. They also call this one a flush game, the loss to Boston. So that's why I put it in the losses, just because that's a game that you try to forget. And they did, you know, at least follow up with a win the next day. So it was a kind
Jason
of flush.
J, one of our commenters, says that deserves its own category. I agree.
That's fair. Hey, that's fair. It does deserve its own category. Then a 6-5 loss against the Angels. That one was close. A 4-3 win over the Cubs. That one was a nice one. That was the TA home run game, but you needed a nice Foster appearance to close that one out. They had an extra inning win against Boston. That was Dylan Cease versus Nick Pivetta. They won that one 3-1 and 10. And then against the Yankees, 3-2. That was Dallas Keuchel's start. Then the Luis Robert home run in Kansas City. They won that one 5-3 and 10. The 2-1 loss where they lost to Kansas City, that was the Brady Singer game. And then the Yankees 3-1 back on the 22nd. So that would have been the first of the doubleheader where AJ Pollock hit his homer. So I guess the only one you're disagreeing with here is the Naylor game.
Correct. And that would make the White Sox 8-8 in those games.
Oh, and only 13 losses and 13 wins. I like the symmetry of that. Mm-hmm. Since we're building this up, I'll accept that, Herb.
Cool. Yeah. I don't know where else you would put it there. I mean, I get you put it in the loss. It would have been a loss, but that's the reason why it was gut wrenching, is because they had a huge win, a huge lead. They blew it and they let the same guy hurt him twice. Goddamn Josh Naylor. Speaking of Canadians, where the hell is our guy KPW? He hasn't been around here lately.
Yeah, ever since he called the Brady Singer game, he's been real quiet.
KPW. I hope you listen to this on Wednesday morning.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, he's probably shows his base background.
Yeah, he's a student. He's probably doing finals right now. I'm all pressuring him to listen to our little White Sox podcast. He's up in TDOT enjoying himself.
He's at
university. Is that what they say?
Mourning the loss of over Zach Collins being sent down to AAA. That's where KPW is. He was pounding his chest about
him hitting like a couple home runs that first week.
Yeah, how's that working out for you? But you know, and hey, how's Reese McGuire working out for the Sox? You know, it's working out fine for both teams.
You got a good hit on Sunday night.
Well, and the reason they traded Reese McGuire was to send him down to AAA. They couldn't send him down to AAA. They could send Zach Collins down to AAA. So that was really the reason those teams made those trades, was that Reese McGuire can catch, Zach Collins can't, and that the Blue Jays could send Zach Collins down to AAA. So they did that. And I don't think he's a solid backup catcher. Zach Collins sucks.
No, I think he's saying solid backup catcher for Reese McGuire. I hope he is, at least. Yeah. He is. Zach is not good at catching.
So, Herb, what do you think about tomorrow? We got Wednesday, May 25th. You got Giolito versus Hill. This game's supposed to get rained out. Do you think this game's going to get rained out? And we're not even going to have a game tomorrow?
Every single time I believe a game's getting rained out, especially at guaranteed rate, it doesn't, because that field drained so well. We went to the game that was supposed to get rained out versus the Seattle Mariners, and nothing. That was when Robbie Ray got roughed up a little bit. And we saw how wet that track was, how wet the infield was. And then like an inning later, bone dry, because Roger Bossert's an expert at his job. So, yes, I saw the forecast. It's going to rain all day and all night long. But if anybody can get the game in, and if this is a team that doesn't, this is the last time they're coming in, I'm sure they don't want a getaway game where you're doing a doubleheader or finding a common off day where you're both off. I don't know where Boston goes on Friday, but I'm sure they have another game where the White Sox do have a rare Friday in-season game off. So, yeah, I think they'll try their darndest to get this game in with the Boston Red Sox on Wednesday night.
Red Sox are in Baltimore on Friday, so it looks like probably be a doubleheader on Thursday, because it's a night game on Thursday. So it'd be a 7:10 night game between the Sox and the Sox, and then they'd make that one up in the day.
Oof, that would be tough, man. Doubleheader, leaving Chicago probably at like midnight to get to Baltimore to play a night game on Friday night. I mean, it's kind of a dick move for the White Sox to have a getaway day and 7 o'clock, but whatever. But if you ever have a doubleheader, ooh, long ass day, it'll be real tough.
Yeah, and I'm excited for the White Sox to face Rich Hill. I think this is a get-right game. This is a guy that they can take advantage of, and I see that somebody's saying, where is this? Someone's saying Rich Hill is going to eat up the White Sox or something like that. Dick Mountain coming out here. I can't see it now, but, you know, I'm not really afraid of Rich Hill.
No,
I'll be honest with you here. And I understand that he's good at, Fred saying if they actually play tomorrow, soft tossing Rich Hill going to make them look real bad. I don't think so. This team's been fine hitting. Today was okay. I think they were really surprised by Nick Pivetta's curveball. I think they were expecting to see a slider more. And he's got a really interesting curveball. It feels like he goes over the top a lot with his curveball. Very interesting break. And they showed some of the StatCast 3D stuff. And it just really felt like it fell off a table once it was coming towards the plate. So that was just a really odd pitch to look. And I feel like the Sox are coming around, especially with Jose hitting. So I'm not too worried about the Sox. I think that Rich Hill's a guy that they can hit around. I'd just be really more worried about Michael Wacha. It really feels like this team can't hit right-handers. And that's the thing is, you know, if you're facing a smart right-handed pitcher, I feel like they can just carve up the White Sox. And Nick Pivetta was a smart right-handed pitcher today, and I think that Michael Wacha can do the same for the White Sox. So, Herb, I'm looking at this, and I think the Sox might, like, lose 2 out of 3 in this one.
Damn it, that's going to be real tough for the White Sox, especially off of this big-time momentum swing you had this weekend with the New York Yankees. But that Pivetta curveball, that's tough as hell. You're sitting 95-plus, and you're ready to gear up, and you're ready to crush it, and then that some bitch is throwing from the same arm slot, and it just falls over. And you saw so many White Sox batters just frozen. It's like, there's nothing I can do about that. And they just walk back to the dugout. I was like, hey, man, I don't blame you. Like, yeah. Usually on 2 strikes, I tell you, go down swinging. What could you do there? That man's throwing 76-mile-per-hour knuckle curves that started way above your head and then drop right into the zone, man. I mean,
there was one he threw to Grandal, and Grandal just stared at it, and he just, I think, wanted to argue with the umpire so he didn't have to face it again. It was just ugly.
Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know this man was that tough. I mean, the White Sox got him right in the start they had earlier where he went 6 shutout innings, and now they got to him a little bit with the Jose Abreu home run. And by the way, stop jumping. That reminded me of Aloy. That ball was hit 418, so that means it's 18 feet past the people who were jumping. I forgot who was in center field. Was it your man's from LA, Verdugo? Was he in center field? Whoever. No, it was Kike Hernandez or something like that. I was like, what are you jumping for? You're going to get hurt like Aloy Jimenez did in spring training. But that was a rocket. And like you said, Hose is coming. He's, if not already there, balls are flying over the fence. Balls are starting to drop in. I'm sure this is very good for his confidence. Instead of, you know, everybody could tell him, hey, man, you're hitting the ball right. You're just running to bad luck. But he looks at his stats. He's like, man, this is not me. Now he gets to see a little the fruits of his labor and keeps the same mindset. I think Hose will be more than willing to kill more this season. He's coming. And AJ Pollock had a tough day. It's probably because I picked him as the click to pick.
Tim Anderson had a nice day, but really, I mean, the guy that's coming, and it's not Aloy. Aloy is coming, but he's coming.
Eli's coming too.
And also,
Hydra Hertz.
Jason Benetti also said Reese McGuire was coming a little bit earlier.
Did he? I missed that.
They're going around the diamond and talking about all the guys that came into the game. And Jason Benetti did say Reese McGuire is coming. And then there was a weird, long, awkward pause. And I think that professional broadcaster realized what he said and wanted to have everybody forget that he said Reese McGuire is coming. And
probably had to turn the mics off and put the cough button on so they can laugh.
Oh, it got real quiet. It got real, real crickety up in that booth. They started stop making jokes about all those churro milkshakes up in the booth, and they just started avoiding all that and just going back to baseball.
And that said, they were in 3:30. You gotta have a special ticket to get up to that churro milkshake. I can't get there if I'm in the 100 level, can I?
No,
those are club levels.
Yeah, isn't 3:30 scout seats or something like that?
No, that's like the club level, like the. Where you have seats outside, but you can go inside to the concourse. It's a little bit better concessions than the rabble down in 100 or 500. Like, ugh, we got our own private bathrooms here. We got to share with other people, but they're all in this 300 section.
These people think that these games count. Just May, friends.
His pinky's up while he's drinking his tea, his Miller matcha Light. Tea.
His Miller Light. Beer of champions, friends.
So, like, how the hell am I going to get a churro shake? And like Steve, I am lactose intolerant, so I take risks. He's like a 70-year-old man, so taking risks is, you know, a little tough, because that's a tough day right there if you know you're lactose intolerant and you eat or drink something that is very much into dairy. Like, a milkshake really messed me up. Cheeseburgers don't mess me up too tough. Pizza doesn't mess me up too tough. But anything like liquid milk or like ice cream, ugh, Jesus.
I love liquid milk. Milk is my favorite form of milk.
Just terrible.
Liquid milk. Do they put your liquid milk in a bag? Real quick. Not only is Reese McGuire coming, but Andrew Vaughn is too. Andrew Vaughn had a real mistake. His worst hit today. His worst contact was 88 miles per hour off the bat, and it was a double down the left field line. That's a good day for you guys. 105 against Sawamura. It was a line shot that went down for a single. He had an 88 mile per hour double down the left field line off Pavetta. He also had 102 mile per hour ground out against Pavetta, and he had a 92 mile per hour ground out against Tyler. It just feels like Andrew Vaughn's coming, and I do think that it's it would be really beneficial to the White Sox if they started moving him up in the lineup, more specifically above Gavin Sheets. But that's all I got for tonight.
And I agree with you, but because you know I want him in the lineup all the time. I just say it's a victory that he's in the lineup. So, yes, I don't like him to be ninth or eighth, but he keeps on proving that he can hit in this league. Tony should check in every once in a while. It's like, yeah, let's move him up a little bit. Maybe he should have been third today, with Pollock not being eighth, but not being the third hitter, even though he's been hitting the ball pretty well.
And if the White Sox get to face Rich Hill tomorrow and Andrew Vaughn is in that lineup, I do think that he will have a good day. And I think I'll already make a pick right now. He's my click to pick. Andrew, right, Herb? He's in the lineup tomorrow. That game gets played. Andrew Vaughn, my click to pick. But we'll finally get one right.
Your computer's about to go out, so you're like,
is Andrew it? Vaughn,
it's making these sounds. You sound like a robot. No. You're in and out now, so I can kind of hear you. But since you're picking Andrew Vaughn, I'm going to reluctantly go with Tim Anderson tomorrow. Ugh, that guy.
That's brutal. Cheapers.
So, Steven, write it down. Mark it down.
All right.
I'll go with Tim Anderson.
I'm going Andrew Vaughn. Herb's going Tim Anderson. We'll wrap this up because apparently my computer is crapping out. Yes, I turned my Wi-Fi off, Steven, okay? I turned it off. God. You can follow Herb Lawrence on Twitter.
He's a small wonder.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Joe_W_Anderson. You can follow Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer, at Vinny Duber. And you can follow CHGO White Sox at @CHGO_White Sox. For producer Stephen Nicholas and for Fleetwood Mac and their 1979 album Tusk, we will talk to you tomorrow, and go White Sox.